It's This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis. Anna, good morning. I did not realize there was a connection between FDR's New Deal and Chicago.
A fascinating one, too. Good morning, Bob. This guy, I've got some oldies but goodies this morning, some cool stuff we dug up. This week, 1932, the Democratic National Convention was held here, held at Chicago Stadium. Franklin Delano Roosevelt flew in to accept his party's nomination, which is actually a departure from the way they used to do it before that. You didn't show up till later. Mm-hmm. And he came in, accepted the nomination, and true story, it was in Chicago when Roosevelt first uttered the words, New Deal. Hmm. As a promise to Americans, you know, that there was a way out of these dark times in the 30s and the unemployment and the depression. The New Deal, though, came to mean so many things for Americans over the years, as we know, you know, creating this safety net on employment, Social Security, the Farm Security Act. You had shovel-ready jobs actually originated then. They did an infrastructure spends to put people to work and labor laws, the 40-hour work week, so many things. Workers' comp goes on and on. But at that moment in time, it's pretty interesting to go back and look, because Roosevelt spoke of a New Deal that day, and it was largely just a concept, this broad idea that was a promise to struggling Americans that there would be a way out and the government would help them find that way. The words New Deal had been written into the speech by his speechwriter, actually, at the last minute. They weren't sure. It was kind of a late ad. And it was just kind of this idea that things would be different. One of the most important things there, too, was reversing the ban on alcohol sales. That was a big part of the reforms when he talked about it that day. And we pulled a little bit of his speech from Chicago at Chicago Stadium, Franklin Delano Roosevelt in 1932.
Convention wants repeal. Your candidate wants repeal. And I am confident that the United States of America wants repeal. I say to you now that from this date on, the 18th Amendment is doomed. I pledge myself to a new deal for the American people. Give me your help not to win votes alone, but to win in this crusade to restore America to its own people.
Wow. Sounded like a lot of people wanted to drink to that, huh?
What a popular campaign slogan. We're going to bring back alcohol.
Can't miss.
By the way, we'll probably change your life with Social Security and other things, too. But this is what's most concerning at the moment.
Of course. Anyone who was around here in 1966, this week in 66, probably remembers hearing the news, the terrible news about the student nurses on the South Side.
Might even remember where you were at that moment. I wasn't alive then, but geez, we've heard about this for years and years. It was such a horrifying crime that shook all of Chicago, if not the nation. Serial killer Richard Speck terrorized the nursing community and all of Chicago when he broke into the medical community housing. A lot of nurses lived in this particular apartment complex near the hospital on the South Side. And one by one, he pulled the nurses from their apartment, brought them to another apartment, and killed them. He killed 8 nurses that day. Could have been 9. One nurse named Cora Amuraro managed to escape certain death at the hands of Richard Speck by somehow hiding from him in that apartment. Here she is. We pulled some audio years later because she didn't speak out for a while. But years later, here she is on the Oprah Winfrey Show describing her recollections from that fateful day.
We started with 6 of us. Uh-huh. And then Gloria came in. Mm-hmm. And then the other 2 came in later on. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're all lined up there.
Uh-huh.
While Pam has been taken out.
Uh-huh.
Did nobody say anything?
Nobody was talking.
Were your hands bound, legs bound?
Yeah.
But you could still speak?
Yeah.
Were you thinking that he's going to kill you?
No, I wasn't thinking of that. But
were you thinking he was going to rape you?
I only thought about that is when he took like about 3 girls out already. You know, I said, my God, I think he was raping them. Or, you know, But I was not thinking that he was killing them.
Were you in a bedroom? Was there just one bed and you hid under one bed? Did the other women go to another room?
No.
Crawl to another room and hide? Or were there several beds in the room?
There are three beds in the room.
Yes.
Mm. So all of us was just hiding under the bed, and the other one was in between the two. You know, that's a small room,
mm-hmm.
but there's three beds in there. Yeah.
And he found the others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did.
Speck was sentenced to death, but that was later reduced to life in prison, wasn't it?
It was, and then she didn't want to speak out publicly. There were a lot of people asking her to talk about it, and she just didn't. As long as he was alive, she said she felt in fear of her life, and who can blame her? She did serve as the lead witness very bravely and was able to get him, that death sentence, which eventually, as you say, Bob, was changed over to a life sentence.
And Speck died of a heart attack while he was at Stateville, and that happened on the eve of his 50th birthday. Mm-hmm. The next story we're going to talk about, this is interesting because I was just talking to somebody yesterday who said to me, hey, well, whatever happened to the Asian carp scare around here? And
I don't know.
But there's a history of this in Chicago, isn't there? Not just
okay,
Asian
so
carp.
Before, totally, Bob, before the Asian carp were the most dreaded and feared and hated fish in these parts, there were the alewives. This is way back in 67, and listeners who were old enough and around at that time who liked to go to the beaches will know that you couldn't go to the beach, any of the beaches in Chicago in 1967, because of the incredible stench of all the alewives that just washed up on the shores from north to south. Every beach was impacted. These little herring-like fish just washed up by the thousands. They were a foot deep in some parts. It was just crazy. Mountains of dead fish, this horrible stench on the beaches. No one went to the beaches, and the park district was trying to just manage it all with bulldozers and you know, big equipment, heavy equipment to move them out of there, but they just kept dying off in waves all summer long. They blame Bob, an Asian carp-like fish for it, too. There was an invasive species in the lake that upset the ecosystem, they said. There was this non-native sea lamprey that made its way in and wiped out all the lake trout. And the lake trout were the ones that were eating the alewives. So when they were gone, there was a population explosion. So what they did was they brought in Chinook salmon.
Hmm.
The government, after 1967, started stocking the lake with the salmon. And they kept the alewife population in control.
And today,
so, yay salmon.
Yeah, we've progressed, and we only have E. coli to worry about now.
Until the Asian carp surface again. God help us.
We haven't changed our format to classical. It's This Week in Chicago History. Anna, tell us about free concerts way back in 1935.
So before its time, Bob, this is interesting. Back in the summer of 1935, Chicago did something that no other city was doing at the time, introducing free music concerts. And you would have heard Johann Strauss, popular at the time. Jazz and swing were just coming into being extremely popular types of music. Just really interesting that the city fostered this kind of culture back then. It was this huge summer concert series, 64 free concerts. You just put, lunch hour, whenever it was, evening, they had constantly had concerts going on in Grant Park at the Petrillo band shell. And it was, again, kind of way before its time. You know, it'd be years before they'd launched Blues Fest and Jazz Fest, many decades later. But this was the start of the big city music fests that become hugely popular. The first concert only drew 4,000 people back then. But, it really caught on after that. And one of the top artists who appeared on stage there, too, we have a little bit from him, Benny Goodman, the King of Swing, who is actually from Chicago.
Doesn't exactly sound like Lollapalooza, does it?
You got to think about it. All the crazy kids at Lolla this summer can thank Benny Goodman and the visionaries in the city government back in 1935, because they really started this whole outdoor summer concert series thing in Grant Park, and it became a music destination really ever since. It's been the place.
This next item is an interesting bit of trivia. Chicago almost became its own state, didn't it?
You know, you think about this, Bob. 1925 was the year, and you think about what it was like at that time. Chicago was just exploding, the population. It was, you know, about to host another World's Fair, and it was just an incredible place to be. And downstaters didn't really like all the attention and the population explosion that was happening. The shift of power was certainly happening before their eyes. And so at that time, they decided that they were looking into making Chicago a state, the state of Chicago. Downstaters wanted to split off, and the Illinois Constitution calls for legislative districts to be redrawn every 10 years after the U.S. Census, even back then. But they hadn't done it in 25 years. So for years, they were kind of like ignoring it because they knew once they redrew the lines that, you know, Chicago would get a ton more seats. So they stopped and then instead came up with this plan. You know, what we'll do, we'll split off Chicago. That'll be its own state, and we'll be ours, and we'll keep our control. And, you know, the roughly 3 million people up there can be the state of Chicago and blah, blah, blah. I mean, spoiler alert, it never happened, Bob. And things remained, well, they didn't remain the same. They changed quite a bit as the shift of power happened and the city grew. So, cool story.
The state of Chicago would have had its own federal representation, right?
Would have had two senators, the whole thing. It would have been the 11th most populous state at that time if Chicago had, you know, split off, even without the downstate population. So it shows you, you know, kind of what they were up against then. And you can't blame them for this sudden shift of power. It just was interesting that that's what they came up with. Even back then, politics was certainly interesting in the state of Illinois, Bob.
Back in 1925. And then finally, you don't normally associate music with Al Capone, but there is a connection, isn't there?
There is. You know, it's interesting. This wasn't Gangster Capone or Bootlegger Capone or Outfit Hitman Capone. This was Patron of the Arts Capone. He had such an impact on the arts community in Chicago and really some rising legends of the future. He bought a stake in the Sunset Cafe on East 35th Street. It was known as Chicago's brightest pleasure spot, but it then became known as one of the most legendary places for jazz in America, providing a stage and the monetary support from Capone for future legends like Louis Armstrong, Cab Calloway, Count Basie, Billie Holiday, Nat King Cole. They were all coming of age at this time, and they were regulars at the Sunrise Cafe, a well-funded place to play because of Al Capone's affiliation. You remember, this is the Great Depression, and there weren't a lot of clubs were closing. So we did pull a little Louis Armstrong just because.
It's interesting that the building that housed the cafe is still there at 315 East 35th Street.
Wow.
Yeah, how about that? And
I haven't been to it. I wonder if it looks anywhere near. What is it now? Do you have any idea, Bob?
No, I'm not sure. Now, at one point, it was called, the Grand Terrace Cafe.
Oh, I do remember that.
But quite a bit of history there. I didn't realize that so many people played there.
Yeah, Patron of the Arts Al Capone, another moniker for him.
Anna DeFlantis, This Week in Chicago History. Thanks, Anna. Talk to you next Wednesday.
Thanks, Bob.